The home of jump racing. This is where the magic happens. Feel like a Cheltenham favourite with Paddy Power.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Road to Cheltenham. Ruby, how are you?
I am wonderful, Lydia. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. We have got a lot to get through this week, though. So should we just kick on?
I think we should. It was a cracking weekend's racing. So, hey, let's go.
It really was. Well, let's start by talking about Honeysuckle, shall we? She came back in the Hatton's Grace hurdle. She's now unbeaten in 13 starts. The last eight races are in grade ones, and all bar one of those were in open company. And this is the start of her season, Ruby.
Yeah, and look, Henry had made no secret about the fact that he'd have her a bit fitter than he had her last year. And did we see anything different or learn anything new? No, but we got to see Honeysuckle. And what was different, all right, she started lined up in the same place as she usually does. Only Patrick Mullins went outsider on Saldier. Normally, Honeysuckle is the widest on the track, and she jumped the first very well. Now, the second hurdle, Stormy Island missed it in front, and Honeysuckle, which as par for the course with her, was a bit deliberate jumping the second. But when they got to the fourth hurdle, which was the last with a circuit to race, Stormy Island has gone clear of Ronald Pump and Honeysuckle. But already you can see the effect the pace is having on those behind. Saldier, Patrick Mullins is starting to squeeze and niggle. He was flat to the boards. And Abracadabra, as you turn away from the stands and climb up towards Ballyhack, he's also going pretty much as fast as he wants to be going. Now, when they run back down to the fifth last, Honeysuckle flies it up behind Ronald Pump, but both Saldier and Abracadabra, when the pressure's on and they're starting to chase, both missed the fifth last. And what was interesting, as they turned the four out, which is past the six furlong marker, Rachel Blackmore moves up on the outside of Stormy Island. She was committing really early. She had no fear about fitness or stamina. Ronald Pump goes with her, but that never allows the ones behind even get into the race. And by the time they get down to the second last hurdle, it's all over. She jumps the second last really well. But again, as Honeysuckle does down to the last hurdle, shimmies off to her left, a slow jump, but she was just much too good for the opposition.
Yeah, she remains totally dominant in this division at the moment, doesn't she? That jumping that you mentioned, during the course of last season, up to the sort of peak of the champion hurdle, it got a little bit slicker, didn't it? Do you expect the same to happen, i.e. first time out, slight rustiness, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, and the more I went back looking at it before we were on last week, I think our best round of jumping was actually in Leopardstown. She was good in the champion hurdle, but she was brilliant at Leopardstown. She was good at Cheltenham, and she was a little bit worse at Punchestown. But if anything, she's safe and she takes the extra half a stride. But it will get better. But look, what's going to beat her? But you look back at the race, Lydia, and you're thinking, how are Saldier, Abracadabra, those horses struggling so early in the race? Well, it's a common theme of the Hatton's Grace hurdle. And I think if you go back and look at the previous winners, like an Appleshade, Solarina, Limestone Lad, they did the same things to horses. And I don't know, it's because Fairy House even is very level or slightly downhill from the 2.5 mile start till you get past the stands, that the pace never relents early in a Hatton's Grace when you've got real stars like Honeysuckle.
Yeah, she became the fourth three-time winner of that race. And you've mentioned the other ones, Limestone Lad, Solarina, Apples Jade. Let's think about Apples Jade. How she managed to win her Hatton's Grace. Which one have you chosen? The 2018 one?
Yeah, and I think it was where Patrick Mullins went on Wicklow Brave and kind of thought, yeah, he'll serve it up to Apples Jade and we'll see what happens. And we knew what happened. Wicklow Brave went with Apples Jade to the first. I'm on Limonene, the chestnut and the pink colours. Super Sunday's in there as well. But by the time we get to the winning post, away from the fifth hurdle, you can already see how strung out they are. And Appleshade is running away. Now, down to the fifth last, the one that Saldier and Abracadabra missed, Limony missed it as well. That's just the pressure on in the middle of the race, and you're starting to feel a pinch. And again, if you watch Jack Kennedy heading to the fourth last, passing the sixth pole, the very same as Rachel Blackmore, he moves up on Appleshade. It's just a sign of how easy they're going compared to the opposition. And when you spin it on to the second last, look, it's quite like watching Honeysuckle in a way. She's just well clear and the race is over. The one difference is Appleshade absolutely flies the last compared to Honeysuckle. But great horses do that in grade one company. They're just able to keep the pressure on the opposition all the way.
Yeah, she ended up beating Super Sunday by 20 lengths. It was among her better performances of her career, probably her very best, the Irish Champion Hurdle in 2019. It's a similar kind of level of form, don't you think, Honeysuckle and Appleshade, or do you not really think of things like that?
I don't know. It's hard to equate. I mean, if you look back at Solarina in 2004, she beat Brave Inca and ruled supreme. If you go to Limestone Lad in 99, he beat Istebeck.
But Limestone Lad, I mean, come on. Let's talk about Limestone Lad beating Istebeck. I mean, Limestone Lad was brilliant.
He was spectacular. And that to me, and people love to do it, but how do you equate them? You're never going to get them all in the same race. And or you can say, well, the ratings were, who cares? To me, they're champions in their own era, in their own right. And that's all any athlete can be. And that's what horses are. They are athletes.
So this is Limestone Lad over 2.5 miles, which would be at the bottom end of his most brilliant range, up against Istebrak, who, of course, was brilliant at 2 miles.
Yeah, look, they met at the middle distance. But yeah, and it was a race for the ages. But I still don't think it's fair to try and say, well, would Honeysuckle have won that? Or would Any Power or Faheen or Hurricane Fly? Or it's not. They're just, it's a great conversation, but there's never an answer to it.
That's what we try to do there. It's great having the chat, and it's part of the enjoyment of racing. Right, okay, so there is Honeysuckle, and she's at the top of the pile. Let's have a look at some of the horses that she'll be facing from Britain, because some of the key ones were in action this weekend as well. The day before the Hatton's Grace, we had the Fighting Fifth at Newcastle. It was a race that Epatant won outright at the start of last season when everything seemed to go fine. Her seasons plateaued, or rather went a little downhill with back problems last season. This time around, she was making a comeback following back surgery, and she ended up dead heating with Not So Sleepy.
Yeah, and it was a pretty easy race, or looked like an easy race on paper, to figure out what would happen. You literally had two divisions. You had Voidarev, Silver Streak, and Not So Sleepy forward, and Sorayal, Epatant, and Mon Morale following them. But I don't know. I thought it was running a pretty strong gallop, and Mon Morale, I don't think we saw, I know he pulled up injured after, and that probably explains it, but he was the first horse to really feel the pressure, even if Voidarev was the first one to be beaten. But what did I really think? I thought it was a good race to watch. It was entertaining, but I didn't see anything that's going to trouble Honeysuckle.
No. Okay, well, let's go through them briefly individually. Nicky Henderson, the trainer of Epatant, is of the view that she will come on quite a bit for that performance, fitness-wise. I would imagine also maybe confidence-wise, because her hurdling was better than towards the end of last season when something was hurting.
Yeah, definitely. And if you think Not So Sleepy was fit from racing on the flat, so Royale had the two runs at Kempton Park and Wincanton. So, yeah, she theoretically, realistically, factually, should have been the unfittest. So she's the one likeliest to improve. But that only puts her back in the same position where she was at the end of last season.
Yeah, I agree with that, I'm afraid. But Aidan Coleman was saying that he was thinking about, he'd got So Royal on the inside and he came sort of back and round Not So Sleepy. How much impact do you think that had on the result?
Well, to be fair to Aidan Coleman, there isn't a jockey riding that shouldn't think, when you're dead heat to get beat, I should have done something differently. As I watched the race, I didn't quite see it. I thought Aidan was quite harsh on himself, actually. I thought he delivered Epatant with her best chance. I thought by boxing So Royal in, he forced Daryl Jacob to commit on So Royal, who's not the most resolute. And then he came at Not So Sleepy, Epatant and So Royal got a better jump at the last and Not So Sleepy, even though the three of them were quite good. And Epatant, to me, actually robbed the dead heat. As I watched it live, I thought Not So Sleepy was the one that had won, and it was only by the pure nod that kept Epatant in it. So I thought Aidan was harsh enough on himself. I was a little disappointed. I thought when she flew the last, fitness or no fitness, she'd beat the other two.
Jonathan Burke said afterwards that that's the way that he wants to ride Not So Sleepy, in a sort of positive, assertive manner. He felt that tracking the lead in the Champion Hurdle didn't see that horse at his best. And for the rest of the season, over the top 2 mile races, he'll be riding Not So Sleepy assertively. What do you think?
I'd say Rachel Blackmore was absolutely chuffed when she read that. Something's going to give me a lead and go a gallop. Happy days.
Do you think that is better for that horse himself, though?
It probably is, and he's an admirable horse, but he needs a lot of luck to win a Champion Hurdle.
We'll come back to him in a moment because our roadies, our viewers, have had some other thoughts about him. Did you just call So Royal irresolute?
Yeah, I don't think he's the greatest battler in the world. He's a lovely horse. He's a strong traveller. But I definitely think when it gets... How many battles has he won, Lydia?
But you don't think it's grade related?
No, I think if his, and he couldn't, like, in fairness to Darrell Jacob, how did he deliver him any later the way that race transpired? But I think he wants to be the last one attacking, or else he wants to get completely on top if he's going to win.
Silver Streak, holding his head uncomfortably, I felt, and making a load of mistakes. What did you make of him?
He was on the front end in bad weather. Could be as simple as that for him. Or maybe there's a bit more to it, but... no, look, Silver Streak, when he's having a real going day, he's a really good horse, but he has a couple of in and out runs as well in his life.
Okay, he's won the Christmas Hurdle, of course, last season. And you mentioned the top juvenile, Mon Miral. He did return with a nasty cut, which apparently he got when another runner jumped into him. But Paul Nicholls has also said it's back to the drawing board. That says to me that he doesn't think that was enough to account for Mon Miral's performance on his first try in open company.
No, but how often do we say it? Juveniles struggle in their second season, and he was a strong staying juvenile. He stayed really well one day to win at Exeter. He probably just wants further anyway.
He reminds me of Clandis Obeau. I think we're going to see the best of him once he goes over the fences next season and beyond that. Let's reflect on, you mentioned, if Epatant does come on for the Fighting Fifth, that leaves us basically in the same position as in the 2021 Champion Hurdle, and we can have a look at the relative positions of Honeysuckle, the winner, of course, Epatant, who finished third, possibly arguably could have finished a little bit closer in third still if she hadn't have got boxed in a round of two out, and then Not So Sleepy, who gets outpaced and then just sticks on for fifth.
Yeah, but Epatant finishes 3.5 lengths in front of Not So Sleepy. There's a length and a quarter to Silver Streak and another 3/4 of a length back to Saldier. And I think that form and finishing position is pretty reflective of those horses' abilities and where they would all finish when they meet in good form.
I tend to agree with that. Let's think about the rest of the season. In Ireland, we've got Matheson Hurdle over Christmas. We've got the Christmas Hurdle. Beyond that, in February, obviously, there's the Irish Champion Hurdle. There's the Champion Hurdle. And then we've got Aintree and Punchestown beyond that. In terms of the Matheson, do you think there's any chance that we could see Honeysuckle there?
No, I'd say Henry will stick to this very same tried and tested route that he's gone with her last year. She'll go straight to the Dublin Racing Festival. And I suppose that makes Charger probably the one to beat in the Matheson Hurdle.
Yeah, okay. Right, I mentioned that you roadies have got some different ideas about Not So Sleepy. You've been getting in touch to say so. Now, Ruby, I'm going to hold back what your view on these are until later on in the show. But this is just three thoughts from our viewers. So Ricky Hogan, he says... I think he's worth his place in the Champion Hurdle. Johnny Burke's key to the horse. I'd definitely go if there was a lack of pace in the race, as he could get a soft lead. He likes to dictate. The Golf Club at the Golf Club says, no point in shooting the Champion Hurdle. Don't try and restrain him like last year. Let him do his own thing. And Chris Jones says, he wants to know, and you can maybe answer this question, Ruby. Do you upgrade Not So Sleepy's run given that So Royal ran his race and has beaten a leading Champion Hurdle contender? Or do you downgrade Epatant's for not putting the race to bed? More hurdles for Not So Sleepy means more dodgy jumping.
Yeah, he is a bit wayward for a horse with a lot of experience, the way he runs around a little bit on takeoff side. But do you downgrade, upgrade? I don't know. I think the one that was... There's lots of positives to take out of Epatant, but you'd still like to see her have win in the race. So you're probably bringing her down a bit rather than putting the others up.
Okay, so those are our thoughts on the two milers after the fabulous return of Honeysuckle. There'll be more about Not So Sleepy later on the show, but next we're moving on to the novice hurdlers. And now to talk about the novice hurdlers. And Ruby, in order to kick this off, we asked the roadies, which novice hurdler excites you most right now? Now, you remember a couple of weeks ago, I demanded that we would get more than 2,000 responses. And last week was really disappointing. I was bitterly disappointed. It took me several days to get over it. How many replies do you think we've had this time around?
I'd say none. I said there's no one that afraid of you.
More than 2,000 people, Ruby.
Oh, there's lots of people afraid of you then.
Yeah, back up your ideas. Right, well done, guys. Congratulations. That's the kind of response we like to see. Can we make it 3,000? Can we? Anyway, overwhelmingly, Ruby, they voted for John Bonn, What did you think of Newbury novice hurdle winner John Bonn?
I don't find that surprising, Lydia. And I thought he was really good. Obviously, it was a messy start, and it's usually something we say about Ireland, but this is a really impressive maiden hurdle performance, which we don't hear about too much in the UK. But look, no one wanted to go on. It was a slowly run race early, and John Bonn eventually took over, going to the third hurdle, which he jumped really well, jumped his way to the front. I thought he was really good then at the fourth. I thought he was nimble and quick with his feet at the fifth. They rounded into the straight to the third last, which was the sixth hurdle, and he came out of Aidan Coleman's hands. Great scope. But he was always in control of this race, and he never looked in any way in danger. Good Risk At All was a fair horse, and he's made him look a lot less superior to him. So, I was really taken with John Bonn. Loved everything he did.
Yeah, jumped far better than the runner-up, didn't he? This is what the roadies think. So David Harvey says, John Bonn's the most exciting. Thought he was very slick at his hurdles, particularly for a debut. But he does point out that if you ran this poll next week, there could be a number of other horses challenging for the title because there's some big names entered over the coming week. More of that in a moment. David Goodall says, not John Bonn. He seemed close to boiling over prior to the start at Newbury. Although travelling smoothly on the bridle, I'm not convinced he'll handle a full house, the Roar, prior to the Supreme start. And what would he find off the bridle?
I think he'll find plenty. And look, Classical Dream was one novice I can think of that was quite messy, that managed to go and win a messy in the prelims, that managed to go and win a Supreme. But I think John Bonn will improve with age. He was quite worked up at the Newbury work gallops morning. I watched him going to post on Saturday, Friday even at Newbury, and I loved the way he went down. So professional, ears pricked, no ducking, no diving. I think he's a professional racehorse that just has a bit of bounce to him, more so than anything.
Yeah, I agree. Nicky Henderson has called him a bit of a fidget. I think he's growing up in front of our eyes, and he's a full brother to Duval, and I think he's got that bit of pep about him that good horses tend to have.
Good word.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Statuaire, of course, lost out in the vote, but she did win a Grade 1 on Sunday, so I suppose swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, swings and roundabouts is right. The Royal Bond was an interesting race. Obviously, Arctic Warrior and my mate Mozzie set about making the running, and they went a good gallop down to the first, but they slowed it down because from the second hurdle to the winning post, if you've seen the red and white colours, Mighty Potter, Brian Cooper, he was quite keen. When the round event to the third hurdle, my mate Mozzie jumps on, but look for Statuaire in the orange. She's now racing quite keenly. So this race wasn't run at a strong tempo. When they passed the 6 furlong marker, heading to the fourth last hurdle, look for the black colours, Impervious. Brian Hayes moves out to be ready to attack. But because he moved out so early, this race started to build earlier probably than it should have. And as they get to the second last hurdle, my mate Mozzie flies it in front. Statuaire in the orange is tucked in. Mighty Potter in the red makes a mistake. But it's the last hurdle that's key here. My mate Mozzie gets in too deep, makes a mistake, and it allows Statuaire to pounce. But the one that caught my eye as they run by the winning post and around the bend is Mighty Potter. The race definitely didn't suit him, and he was the one that was finishing the best.
Yep, some roadies have picked out Mighty Potter from that race as well. They've also, there's quite a bit of love for my mate Mozzie. What would you say about that?
He was just unlucky. He'd been really professional in his first two starts, but I think, like John Bonn in the UK, there's bigger ones and better ones going to start rolling out every week.
Willie Mullins was interesting about Statuaire. He said afterwards that he ran her here rather than the handicap because if there was ever going to be a Grade 1 that she could win, this was her chance with all of her experience. Mare's novice hurdle is the target for her this season at Cheltenham?
I would have thought so. I thought Impervious was setting the standard until the weekend. She was maybe a little disappointed in the Royal Bond. Statuaire beat her. And then, of course, she had Grangy as well, winning a maiden hurdle on Saturday. So a couple coming in there.
I'm glad you mentioned her because she's been raised by some of our roadies under C. Other. The Market Man, who's a regular correspondent. Nice to hear from you again. He said it's the most confident novice bet that right now would be for Grangy in the Mare's novice. She has gears, she stays and jumps like a stag. What did you make of her at Fairy House?
I thought she jumped really well, Lydia. She was a decent mare last year, beat Party Central at the Dublin Racing Festival, came back and won the Mare's bumper at Punchestown. So she's a decent mare who jumped really well.
And who's setting the standard mares-wise in Ireland at the moment, do you think?
I thought it was Impervious until the weekend, having watched her in Down Royal. And she's probably dropped slightly down the pecking order with Statuaire beating her. Grangy looks the potential. And obviously it's LA Bell in the UK, probably.
Absolutely, after her win at Newbury, where she hurdled a lot better and looked to benefit from a stronger pace as well. And will stay going up in trip. How about Stage Star, another winner from Newbury? There's some love for this one. Ad Arnold says, travels well, jumps well and has a turn of foot. And Barbella says, going the same route as Brave Man's Game, which is referring to the fact that Connections are talking about going to the Challow potentially next.
Yeah, possibly. Made a mistake at the second, but other than that, he was never really troubled. I'd like to see him again before I'd form a strong opinion. I didn't think it was the deepest race.
So remember the question, which was, which novice hurdler excites you most right now? We've had loads of people replying, Sir Gerhard and Kilcrutt, first and second in the champion bumper at the Cheltenham Festival, but not to my knowledge, having jumped a hurdle in public so far.
Well, they're obviously exciting people on potential more than anything else. And look, Kilcrutt holds an entry at the weekend. I think Sir Gerhard as well. They're both in good form. But yeah, look, you're back. You're Anthony and them are getting excited about them and potential, not on what you've seen them do over hurdles thus far.
Here is the excitement. Luke Sharples, cannot wait to see him ping a hurdle. Lockers says he's in the Kilcrutt camp. Yes, John Bond was impressive, but overall, what did he beat? Can't wait to see the Irish horses run and think they'll come to Cheltenham and be dominating again. And Paddy at Jellythot says, surely Kilcrutt has to be top of the list. If he comes out and shows he can jump a hurdle, he'll wipe the floor with John Bond, who hasn't beaten anything of note yet.
If being the word.
And also, I mean, their first time out, they might not beat anything of note. Of course, you could have a scenario, Bob Holland jumping into first hollow, but quite often, you'll see a very, very good horse beating a lot of lesser horses.
Yeah, you will in a maiden hurdle. It's not until you get into novices then by Christmas or early in the new year that you see where the pecking order is. But yeah, look, they're all in good form, but they have to go and do it on the track.
So for Luke Lockers and Paddy at Jellythot, it is very much in Willie we trust, which is not something you want to say outside of racing company. Now, we asked you what you thought you should do with Not So Sleepy. This is the staying hurdles section, so it gives you a clue as to what Ruby might be thinking. Ruby, you're looking at the 2020 Cesarevich with Not So Sleepy tanking along late on, and you're thinking...
I'm thinking up and trip. Be it the stairs hurdle or the 2.5 in entry, I think he needs to go up and trip. And to me, watch him in Newcastle, the way he rallied back, I'm not certain he has the gears for 2 miles over hurdles. I know he's dead heated in the fighting fifth, but when you strip the rest of them fitter and up the quality of the opposition, I think he needs to change distance.
Now, this is something that you thought last week about Goshen. Shall we remind ourselves what you said then?
Here's another one for you then, Goshen. Now, Goshen absolutely thumped Song for Someone when he made his glorious return in the Kingwell last season. We saw what happened in the Champion Hill, just unable to handle the tight left-handed track of the old course. What did you make of his run at Ascot?
I thought it was good. I'd ride him the same way and I'd run him in the long walk as well.
So naturally, I put it to Gary Moore what he thought. And Gary said,
might you toy with going up in trip with him?
No.
It's a straight answer to a straight question.
Yeah. No, everybody keeps telling me that. It's 3 miles now. He's not a boat. You know, like, he's got stacks of speed. But anyway, he's come out of the race tremendously well, which says to me that he probably saved a little bit for himself that day, you know?
Well, Gary knows Goshen best, but doctors differ, patients die.
That's the second time this week that I have heard that phrase. I'd never, ever heard it before this week.
But sure, it's all about opinions, Lydia, even for doctors. And not everybody, and nobody gets it right all the time.
Sadly, no. Right, OK. I said it was the staying hurdle section. So let's talk about the long distance hurdle that was staged at Newbury last Friday. This was quite an extraordinary little race. Talk us through this, Ruby. I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary race. And look, obviously nobody wanted to line up. We kind of expected that. And then Paisley Park jinked right. And obviously Indefatigable, well, she didn't look like she wanted to go anywhere, and that's the way she ran as well. But Paisley Park went with On the Blind Side to the first. And by the time we got to the second, it was a new position for Paisley Park. He was clearly in front, cheek pieces on, and he was liking it. And that's the way the race went for a long way till he got down the back straight to the fourth last, and the pace is starting up over the fifth last, fourth last as well. And they really are turning the pressure on round the bend into the home straight. And Thomas Darby, who's eventually going to win, looks well and truly held when they face up to the third last. Now, Paisley Park goes to three out and he stands a long way off it. He gets there, but ultimately when he lands, it's Aidan Coleman's reaction. He goes from being on the bridle before he jumps it to all of a sudden he's flat out, and Aidan Coleman is gone for his whip and working really hard. And then all of a sudden your eye is drawn to the one behind, which is Thomas Darby. but with the time rate to the second last, looks like he's going to be in front too soon. And Sean Bone, his body language just slows down, jumps to second last, switches outside Paisley Park on the blind side, keeps plugging away, and Thomas Darby goes about his business and wins. I don't know. I didn't do the time analysis on it, but it looked to me like a race that fell apart from halfway between the third last and second last to the line, and Thomas Darby has gone and won. What did I make of it? I don't know. I just think Paisley Park is regressing. That's all I took from it.
Yes. Okay. So Emma Lavelle is of the view that they'll go to the long walk, which was his best performance of last season. He won a grade one, you know, even not at his best last season. And he's still achieving a high level of form that many people would envy. But they're going to go back to the long walk. They're going to ride him in the traditional way, so more patiently. And she hasn't decided on the cheek pieces. Your thoughts?
My thought on last year's long walk was always Richard Johnson's reaction when he crossed the line on Time Hill. He felt his horse pulled up and stopped. And when you watch it back, how much later could Richard have the ladies' challenge? Not any, but Time Hill got left in front and slowed down. And Paisley Park, I always felt, robbed it. Now he robbed it. He won it. Fair play. But I think he has regressed. And I was a massive Paisley Park fan, but I just think he's on the way down.
I think he did well to get there personally at Ascot as well. I think you can say some positive things about Paisley Park from that performance from last season as well. How about Thomas Darby? First time tongue tie, his head carriage not quite so jaunty, and now they're thinking long walk stayers hurdle for him.
Yeah, it looks a natural progression, and obviously the tongue tie worked because if his head's coming down, that means he's not struggling to get air.
But he made a terrible mistake, and really that should put you out of a top class race, and just because of the way the race was won, he's ended up in front when the music stopped.
Basically, that's a good reflection of the Newbury race.
Indefatigable didn't really want to start.
Didn't want to go. Never looked comfortable and was well beaten from a long way out. Lost a lot of ground at the start though.
Mrs. Milner non-stayer at this grade?
Looked it. Maybe she wants slower ground. I don't know. Looked it. It was a big step up for her. She just didn't make it. But look, I suppose you have to give every horse a second chance.
Shocker from Listener Gar Oscar.
Yeah. What's been his best run for a while? I can't think off the top of my head, but I don't think he's ever fulfilled or got back to the heights that he was at when he won the Stayers Hurdle.
I suspect it probably would have been the Stayers Hurdle when he was in a really good position, travelling strongly when he came down last season, but it was a long way out, so I can't prove it. Let's move on to the Hatton's Grace, shall we? Or back to the Hatton's Grace, because you mentioned Ronald Pump finishing second to Honeysuckle again. Abacadabras was third. Afterwards, it was not surprising to hear that Ronald Pump has the Stayers as a target, might come to the long walk at Ascot. But Gordon Elliott has said the Stayers Hurdle for Abacadabras as well.
Yeah, look, Ronald Pump obviously jumped out and went with the front runners. And when they raced away from the stands in the first time headgear, he was comfortable going with Honeysuckle and they were chasing Stormy Island. Abacadabra, for a horse that always looked like a really strong traveller, he didn't really look that happy through the race. And when you look back at it, Lydia, his best run last year was arguably beating Buzz at Aintree for Abacadabra. That was going up in trip. Abacadabra could be a strong travelling horse and people say, oh, he's a bit soft, he doesn't want to be in front. Perhaps he just wants a trip. It could be as simple as that. And maybe going out in distance would bring about the improvement in him. Ronald Pump, he is an admirable horse, but checkered enough career soundness-wise, didn't have many starts last season.
Yeah, missed Christmas with a problem, missed the Stayers Hurdle with a problem, but had finished at second the Stayers the previous season. Let's have a look at the long walk entries because they are intriguing. Ronald Pump is there, but my eye was drawn to three in particular, I think. Time Hill, your favourite, Ruby. Sporting John, interesting that Philip Hobbs has entered the Cheltenham Staying Hurdle winner at grade one level. Stablemate of Time Hill, of course. And Champ, who misses this weekend's many clouds.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the way Champ's jumping fell apart at the back end of last season, it's not surprising to see him in there. Sporting John, it looked like a natural progression from Cheltenham for him. And Time Hill, well, he had a disappointing run in France. But I just think, and looking back through different horses I rode in France, going there without a run to win a big race in Auteuil in November is a hard thing to do.
I can have a look at the betting, looking ahead for the rest of the season. Do you think this is a signal that we're going to be see Champ with his back operation campaigned over hurdles this season? It's obviously plan B, isn't it? In that initially at the start of the season, they were talking Betfair Chase. He wasn't able to get there. Many Clowes Chase wasn't able to get there. And now we've got this herding option. Is that a signal, do you think?
I don't know, but that's part of being a trainer. You have to try and figure out what's best for your horse. And if he's going back to hurdles, that's obviously what they think is the best thing to do with him.
So those are our thoughts then on the staying hurdlers. Next up, it's Analyse This.
So this week on Analyse This, we're going to analyse starts. Races are never won at the start, but they can be lost. And we saw that in Newbury last Saturday on a couple of occasions. We'll start with the Gerry Phelan. One more for the road and Jack Quinlan. Nobody wanted to make the running. But the key to getting what's perceived to be a soft lead is being able to go fast enough to keep the jockeys behind you happy, yet slow enough that you're dictating the race. And that's what Jack Quinlan does. Gow Road is quite keen under Sam Twiston Davis, but Jack just about goes fast enough that Sam is happy to follow him, yet he's still going slow enough to be in pole position. It didn't win the race, but it was the winning of the race.
That was actually plan B, Jack Quinlan and Neil King revealed afterwards. They were going to take a lead, but nobody else wanted to do that. And for Soaring Glory and Gow Road in particular, I think that small field race was always not going to play to their favour.
No, but you should always have a plan B, a C, a D and an E as a jockey.
Right, so then you're going to move on to the Ladbrokes Trophy and the differing aspects of this start.
Yeah, completely different. Obviously, long walk into the start of the Ladbrokes Trophy, and they start just as they get to the end of the running rail into the back straight. Now, those caught very wide in the track. Look to have a long way to go to get to the starter, but as they shoot past the starter and we freeze the frame, Cloudy Glenn on the far side of the track in the Trevor Hemmings green cap is just about in line with Clot Cap, Fiddler on the Roof, those that are going to go hard in front, whereas Eklat the rear has already lost a length and a half or two. Now, he never again gets on the bridle. As we play it forward, Charlie Deutsch does lose ground on the run to the first because he hasn't got the speed. Get to the second fence, he's still quite far back. But the fact that he lined up wide and didn't forfeit any ground at the very start, by the time he gets to the bottom of the back straight, he's exactly where he wants to be. So getting a level break is essential over jumps, just like it is on the flat.
So was that quite skillful from Charlie?
Yeah, I thought it was a great piece of riding because on a horse that was going to lack the speed to hold his position very early, he knew he was going to forfeit ground to the first and to the second, but he didn't forfeit any more by being slow through the tape.
Eventually, the novice on the ropes was fourth. He just didn't seem to have the pace to hold his position early on. I was thinking, though, maybe National Hunt Chase, something like that.
Yeah, he strikes me more as a horse for extreme distances. National Hunt Chase, maybe even a Grand National, a Welsh National, races like that, but extreme distances for him.
Yeah, he's quite a big price, I think, compared with Run Wild Fred, for example, and his form from there. Was it the Munster National that he won previously?
Yeah, Munster National, you know, obviously won Run Wild Fred even, has won at Troytown. So, two similar horses.
Now on to what is my favourite section when we talk about it on the show, and that is Novice Chasers. Now, Ruby, this is a horse that you and I have been excited about from the start of the season. We talked about him when he ran at Carlisle. He's since come out at Newbury. He's been really impressive. It is a Hoy Señor.
Yeah, and he caught a lot of people's attention at Newbury, Lydia. Derek Fox booked him out in front. He was very good at the first fence. Watch his hind end, how far out he kicks his hind legs. And again at the second. Then he gets to the fourth fence, which he was very good. He was awkward at the fifth and at the eighth, which was the water jump. Little bit like Bob Olinger, he is a work in progress. He's quite good at the 10th fence. Watch his front legs snapping out. Now, you will notice, again, at the rest of the jumps we show you, everything is slightly to the right, or markedly to the right, some people will say, with a Hoy Señor. But I love him on the landing side is that Derek Fox doesn't have to make too much effort to straighten him on landing. So he is going right to give himself a little bit of room. But when he lands galloping and back in a straight line. It's not a continuous movement to the right.
After watching him jumping at Newbury, I went back to the Sefton hurdle and I could see, looking more closely, that he is adjusting slightly to his right over hurdles, but it's more pronounced over fences.
It is more pronounced, bigger jumps though. You need to get a little bit higher, so he needs a little bit more room to get up. But it's the landing side for me. And it's a hard one to figure out, and a debate you could have forever. I always felt riding Cauto Star that he went left, so therefore he should be a better horse going left-handed, yet he won 5 King Georges. So here we see him jumping the third last in Kempton, out to his right a little bit, and again at the second last. That was just him. But if you watch him at Haydock, at the second last in the Betfair Chase, he still goes left. But his record was as good going one way or the other. And the other horse of note or profile right now is at Plutar, who always runs left-handed, Yet when you watch him running right-handed at Punchestown, jumps to his right, three out, again to his right, and at the last fence that day in Punchestown, he went left. Watch him at the goal, in the Gold Cup last year, down the hill to the third last, out to his right, and at the last in the back in Haydock, early in the race, to his right again. He does jump right, even though he's a much better record going left.
So a preference for going left or right-handed is something that you and I talk about a lot on this series. How do you distinguish between the horses that are okay when they're adjusting in a particular direction and those that actually need to go a different way around?
Ultimately, it becomes a pattern, and results tell you that a horse is a better going a certain direction to the other. But to me, it's definitely what they do on the landing side, more so than the takeoff. It's how quickly they straighten up, and is there a need only to go right to jump, or do they actually need to be going that direction? When they land, do they continue to go to the right or left, or do they land and straighten themselves? To me, a high senior lands and straightens himself.
And presumably it's exacerbated depending on the track, the tightness of the track, and maybe even the sighting of the fences.
Yeah, look, a fence that's on an angle, be it to the left or to the right, if you jump the wrong way, you will lose more ground. But again, that depends on how quick you straighten when you land as to how much ground you will lose.
So you're thinking of where, I mean, Cheltenham, where would you be thinking of?
Yeah, Cheltenham, maybe Ascot at times. Kempton shouldn't really matter. It could be anywhere, Lydia. But then again, a high senior was very straight at the last fence when he was going on. So in a more competitive race, going at speed, he mightn't go as right.
So Lucinda Russell, who's had some really good horses, one for Arthur, who's won the Grand National, Brindisi Breeze, who won the Albert Bartlett, she thinks, and I think she's right, that this is her best horse yet. She's talking about going for the Quarto Star over the King George course and distance at Kempton. What do you think of that target for him?
I think it's a great idea. Jumping to his right will suit him. In, he should be going. Who knows? Maybe he'll jump left when he goes to Kempton. But it would suit him. And of course, you have Brave Man's Game. And what an undercard to the King George that'll be.
You don't think the track might be sharp-ish for him?
No. Good okay. Horses win everywhere.
Okay. Looking back at the John Franken that he won at Newbury, previous greats that have won that race, Native River won it in 2015, went on to finish placed in the Quarto Star, second in the National Hunt Chase. Thistlecrack won it in 2016, went on to win the King George as a novice. And Santini won it in 2018, went on to be placed in the Quarto Star and placed in the RSA. And Ahoy Senor won this even more impressively than either of them.
Yeah, look, he's a really exciting horse, and I loved him last year in Aintree when he beat Brave Man's Game, and Oscar Elite was third in that race. He was travelling really well when we saw him falling at Cheltenham last week, so that Sefton form could be about to stack up.
Okay, so I promise I haven't been looking over Gary McDaniel's shoulder, but he and I think the same thing. Gary, take it away.
Hi, Lydia. I know that some folk have been unhappy at Road to Cheltenham being screened this early in the season. Just to say, though, I'm actually on the 2023 Road to Cheltenham already, with Ahoy Senor to win the Gold Cup. 33-1 with Ladbrokes. Gracias.
So what do you reckon then? 2023 Gold Cup, Ruby?
Obviously, that's what you do with your pension money, Lydia. Best in mad anti-post bets.
It really is. It really is. So you would be in the Alfie Potter camp, who has said something which is, you know, I hadn't really considered. Lots of water to go under the bridge between now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of water to go under the bridge. I would definitely be more in Alfie's camp. Be realistic.
Thank you. Maddie Playle says, she writes to the Racing Post, why not the 2022 Gold Cup? He reminds me quite a bit of Konigree, of course, won the race as a novice, and connections clearly think the world of him. Go for it, I say.
Why? Konigree didn't exactly have a wonderful career. Yeah, he had a Gold Cup once, so what difference does it make after that? But why would you take on a Plutar, Manila Indo, Album Photo, and whatever else there is when you could possibly be the top dog in a novice chase? Novices for novice races.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. As Prince said, let a novice be a novice and a seasoned chaser be a seasoned chaser.
Can you sing those lyrics?
Nobody would want anybody. Nobody. I can absolutely assure you that nobody wants to hear my singing voice. You know, there's glassware around. It wouldn't be a good idea. Shall we move on to the Grade 1 Drinmore, which was won by Beacon Edge with Gabby Nacko, the, I know you're going to like this, the moral victor in second?
If there's any such thing, Lydia, whatever moral victor says, I never got paid for a moral victory anyway. I do know that. But look, they went a really good gallop here, rattled down to the first fence, Gabinaco and Lifetime Ambition. And all these novices jump really well early. First, third, all good. Up to the fifth fence, I know I crab Beacon Edge and Down Royal. But here again, he was a little bit high at this fence. Turn to the sixth, or going to the sixth, look how fast through the air Gabinaco is. I'm going to turn down from Ballyhack to the last ditch. Beacon Edge is going as fast as he can. Under Dennis O'Regan. They're round to the 10th, and this is where it starts for Gabinaco. This is his first mistake at the 10th fence. Rolled on to the 11th. Cape Gentleman down the inside in the black and red with all the experience. He tips up. Grand Paradis has to nods on landing. And Beacon Edge still looks like he's going as fast as he can. Three out, midnight run falls. Beacon Edge does have to swerve to avoid him a little bit now, but he looks booked for third, maybe fourth, as they head to two out. Gabinaco pecks on landing, and this looks like Fury Road's race to go and win. But they get to the last fence, Gabinaco misses, Fury Road finds nothing, and Beacon Edge just outstays them down the outside. And great ride from Dennis O'Regan. I didn't see it coming watching them in Down Royal, but hey, hindsight's a poor man's foresight.
Right, quick fire through them. Starting off with Beacon Edge, he looks to me like he needs to go up to 3 miles sooner rather than later. If you look at his stayers hurdle fourth from last season, however, he loses two places after the last to more thorough stayers. Should we judge his potential stamina capacity on that run?
No, I think staying hurdle races can often be more stamina sapping. There's obviously more jumping in a chase than there is a hurdle race, and judging him on his Cheltenham run where you can get racing a long way from home with a lot of galloping and very little jumping. No, I wouldn't take that. I would be wanting to watch him over fences before I would say he doesn't stay.
Okay. Gabinaco, can he improve that? Because he got chancier and chancier as the round went on.
Of course he will. He's a novice. He has the jump. He has the technique. It's only a matter of getting it all together.
Fury Road, does he A, have a problem, or B, is he just very polite after you? No, after you.
I'd say he's an issue, and it looked like a wind one to me without knowing. But also it was worth noting that Beacon Edge did have blood coming from both nostrils when he pulled up.
Did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. You could see it clear as day on television afterwards.
I didn't realise that. Okay. And final point, Lifetime Ambition for the Grand Annual, yes?
If you say so, I wouldn't even be thinking that way.
Well, you know, I've got to think about my pension. Let's move on to the Berkshire Novices Chase, shall we? Four runners, two completers, Nassalam managed to win.
Yeah, you have to get round to win, simple as that. Pick Dory flew to fifth last, and I think had all of these horses on the stretch heading for four out under Harry Cobden, but he doesn't back off, hurdles it, and pays the ultimate price. But I think, to me, he was the best horse. Miller's Bank then goes to three out, pricks its ears, has a look, loses a bit of momentum, and does the very same thing at the second last, where he just basically, with not enough momentum, lands on it and fires Harry Bannister out over his ears and left Nassalam to come home alone. Look, Pick Dory, if he's learned from the fall, is the best of these horses, but he has to brush up on his jumping.
Okay, Nassalam, they were thinking too far, the ground a bit too quick. And Jamie Moore was of the view that he might have got to Miller's Bank had that horse not unseated his rider.
I'd agree with him. I thought he was getting to Miller's Bank, but I don't think any of them would want to get to Pick Dory.
Yeah, which Jamie also said. Right, stable companion of Pick Dory, Il Redotto, who earned the final race of the Ladbrokes Winter Carnival at Newbury, a four-year-old laughing at older season handicappers.
Yeah, and earned himself a grade one entry off the back of it. He was travelled really well, eating all weight, all the allowances. He was a slick jumper, very good at three out. Can't really say he jumped two out, but he got from the takeoff side to the landing side and was low and quick again at the last. He's only a four-year-old. He's open to loads of improvement and he's obviously still a novice. He'll progress, I imagine, and progress himself out of handicaps and end up in novice company.
Okay, so those are the novice chases. We remain Ahoy Senor fans. So we're coming to the end of this week's show, but Ruby, we cannot leave without looking ahead to the fabulous racing we've got this weekend.
Yeah, fabulous racing makes for an easy show for us next Thursday, Lydia. We will have learnt if Shaq and Pursuit can climb a hill when he faces Sandowns in the Tingle Creek on Saturday. We'll have the John Dorkin, Envoy LN, Fakir Dudare, Alaho, Mellons, Willie Mullins, has a whole plethora of horses in there.
How many is it in there, Ruby? How many?
Just the eight, Lydia. Some should have gone to Clonmel, some would have gone to Turles, grounded in the Loudat, so they're all backing up. So look, he could have as many as six in it. And Energamine will have run in the hilly way.
And a little bird tells me that you rode Energamine for the first time this week.
I did have that privilege during the week, yeah, and I could see what all the fuss was about.
Well, that is good to hear. So there'll be loads to talk about this time next week. In the meantime, make sure you catch up with the column that accompanies this series. That's at racingtv.com/Road to Cheltenham. And Ruby and I will see you this time next week. Bye for now.
The home of jump racing. This is where the magic happens. Feel like a Cheltenham favourite with Paddy Power.